Hello, story lovers. I'm Ellie Royce, kidlit author, story catcher, and creative human. I'm coming to you from Gumbangya country. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the country and pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging. I'm obsessed with stories. Our stories are threads that connect and weave us together into families, communities, and cultures. They're our heritage and our birthright, our past and our future. We are all made of stories. They tell us where we came from and where we're going. Consuming stories, in all their many manifestations, is more than just entertainment. They hold the magic and power of centuries worth of experience, as well as offer hope in different ways of being as we move forward. In this podcast, I'm going to explore all kinds of ways of consuming stories and all kinds of stories from all kinds of people, as well as the way stories can enhance our lives and increase our well-being. So welcome to We Are All Made of Stories. Oh boy, I was starting to wonder whether this podcast would ever actually get off the ground. But here we are, episode one. Thank you so much for popping in. I have a great interview for us later on. It's Zoe Collins. She's one of the nicest, funniest, most interesting people. And how she lives her creative life is just fascinating to me, and I hope it will be to you as well. I'm going to focus on stories about creativity in this series, as well as stories about food, because to me, food, creativity, and stories are inextricably intertwined. As I record this introduction in November 2020 and look back over the year, I think everyone will agree with me that this is probably one of the weirdest years anyone can remember. And as far as creativity goes, it seems like some creativity has almost withered on the vine and other kinds of creativity have really flourished, maybe because it's been an enforced situation where we've had to return to things that we do at home. So I thought it would be interesting to talk to a whole lot of different people and see how their creativity has flourished and where it's flourished over this year, as well as their long-term creative stories. For me, it's been a very strange year. I had my very first US picture book published this year in April at, you know, possibly the height of the global pandemic. And that made it impossible to do any live appearances. And I don't think people had, to use the word that is so prevalent at the moment, pivoted so much by that stage. So there wasn't a lot of fanfare and it was an interesting experience. I felt very excited, but I was very sort of removed from the process. So that was interesting. The book is called Auntie Uncle, Drag Queen Hero, and you can Google it or you can look it up. It's published by Pow Kids and illustrated by the marvellous Hannah Chambers. When I first saw the illustrations, I actually cried. I thought they were so vibrant and exciting and amazing drag queens have done readings of the book and I'm so proud and so excited that it's come into the world. But it's been a very weird year because for a kidlit author especially, when you have a book come out, there's a lot of interaction and a lot of engagement with kids and the general public and bookshops and all of that. And there wasn't any of that. It was, yeah, like, you know, the proverbial bubble that we all talk about. It was like being in a bubble. Well, enough of me. Without further ado, I think we will jump into talking to Zoe Collins. In writing her bio, Zoe Collins finds it increasingly difficult to define her creative endeavours. She writes, paints on canvas, collages, draws on her iPad, crochets, cooks, eats, talks, writes newsletters, and sometimes imagines herself as a backing vocalist for an 80s rock band. She also has a quiet ambition and desire to avoid working for the man. Her latest creative endeavours include a range or two of spunky earrings, a tea towel design, and random drawings on Noritake fine china. As a graphic designer and illustrator, she has worked in studios, run her own business, and taught in universities. Her current teaching endeavours are strictly unbureaucratic and lean heavily towards creative problem solving and play. Zoe lives in Brisbane with her three favourite humans, the best dog ever and a bastard of a cat. She enjoys making paper journals with her long arm stapler and feeding appreciative eaters. Work experience and qualifications include Bachelor of Arts, English and Media Studies at University of Queensland, Diploma in Visual Communication, Design College Australia, Graphic Designer and Illustrator, 2003 to today. And then she says, I used to be a bookseller, nanny and terrible secretary. I also worked for a summer in the USA, teaching kids art and craft. So many questionable career choices, so little time to apologise. And while we didn't actually cover these questionable career choices in our long conversation, I would like to thank Zoe Collins for giving this episode its name. Thank you very much. Okay, so creativity is tied into everything we do. Some of us are fortunate to unlock that early in our lives. So when did you, Zoe Collins, find your creative voice and how did that come about?
You know, Ellie, I think my creative voice found me. I don't recall a time when I wasn't doing something. As a little kid, I read voraciously. And funnily enough, even though I'm more of a visual artist these days, I've always thought of myself more as a writer because as a kid I just read and read and read and I used to write stories. And my primary school was really good at encouraging the arts. So we were in plays and they weren't just silly, like, but they were epic productions, man. There was makeup and hair. Like at the age of 9, I thought I was going to be a star. And I do recall we had a little publishing program at school. So we got to write stories and then they'd get published. And there was a woman who I still know to this day, who would illustrate and produce our stories and just, you know, just tiny little cardboard books, but I've still got my first one.
That's fantastic. And,
I love it. And I remember writing this epic story about, I think it was a skeleton that had lost its funny bone or something. And I worked on it for months and it got lost. The secretary who was typing it up lost it.
Oh, no.
And I'm still heartbroken because I think that would have been my
your magnum opus.
Yeah, totally. I'd be famous right now. I don't really remember a moment where I finally thought, oh, here's my creative voice. I think it's something that has built over time, like from way back. And I don't think I've ever really known myself without it. I've always needed a bit of an escape and I've always kind of had a compulsion to do something. I'm not saying that I was that great at it early on, but I was always had my head in the clouds, always had stories running through my brain. I've got my my poor old sister had a Xanadu tape, you know, the soundtrack.
Yes, I remember it well.
Yeah, me too. Oh, so good. I still would listen to that. I actually bought it for her on CD I would have been in my 30s. But I remember as a little kid, this is like family, Collins family lore, I recorded over her Xanadu tape and I was talking to my imaginary friend Wish Wish. Interviewing her. So, like, I was constantly away with the fairies, drawing, talking, writing, whatever. I can't even, Play-Doh, who knows. Lots of Lego. I love Lego. So, that's the question.
Well, that's a great story. It does answer the question and it's a great story because actually when I told my mum that I was going to do this podcast, she said, oh, yes, of course you are. And I, What did you mean by that? She said, oh, well, when you were 3, you used to sit in your room and interview your toys and also people that I couldn't see and, you know, chat away to them. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that gives me permission to go ahead, obviously, with this project in my 50s, you know. But I thought, yeah, well, there you go. You know, if it's in you.
I still have imaginary conversations with people.
Yeah, me too.
constantly. I'll be walking around and then I'll realise I've got this kind of dialogue going on, but no one else is there. That's okay, right?
That's fine. I think it's fine. Okay, so I've been working through The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron over the last few months, or revisiting it, and I feel like it's really interesting to examine, for me, my creative process in the context that creativity is actually part of a flow and something that gives you a connection to source energy. And I feel like when I'm in the creative flow, I feel like there's no time. So when I sit down to write, or, you know, we're talking about the whole person. So, I mean, I love cooking when I'm in the garden, you know, when you get into that state, that's just like the flow state and there's no time, and it's 2 hours later or, you know, dusk. Yeah. You're sitting there and realise it's starting to get dark and think, oh, well, how long
always dark.
So do you find
that? It's always the light. Yeah, totally. That is something that, and it's, as I've got little kids, so I don't get to do that as much as I used to, but I that kind of feeling or that experience seems to worm its way in even if I don't have any time. Mm. I always feel like I'm craving it, but what I kind of think that, you know, I'll be doing something, you know, normal, like, I don't know, something that responsible adults do, like cooking or wiping benches down or something, and then suddenly I'll realise I've got the watercolours out and I'm like, what am I doing? And, you know,
how did that happen?
I'm kind of exaggerating a little bit. Like, I'm not completely unconscious to my movements around the place, but, yeah, I remember saying this to one of my art teachers once, that, and it was like my first go at art lessons after I had kids. So it was for my 40th birthday. My in-laws and my parents bought me these art lessons with this awesome teacher. And I remember saying to her one day, quite seriously, not realizing that it's actually quite funny, that my poor old husband, he doesn't understand the urgency, like where you just have to pick up a pen or you have to find that particular sticky tape or, you know, like,
yeah.
So it's, and then like, that's when for me it kicks in, that timelessness or that shifting. And that's often when I produce my best work, is when I'm feeling that absolute, and it's not fully conscious. It's like, I honestly will find myself doing something and sort of realize a part way in that I'm doing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like, well, I always feel like I've tapped into something else, you know.
I feel like when I write
good stuff,
yeah,
as opposed to crap stuff, I feel like it's, you know, I read it afterwards and think, oh gee, that's like a bought one, you know, that's quite good. But I don't actually feel like I wrote it. I feel like it just came through and I listened to dictation or watched the picture and wrote it down or something like that. So,
yeah. I agree. Yeah. I feel like it's like you're a vessel and something's just feeding into you and then moving out of you. Yeah. And I don't know if I should share this, but I go and see a psychologist quite often, and we often get back to this thing that the vessel. It's this recurring theme where she'll say to me, in some instances, it's not a good thing because I become a vessel of everyone else's misery and think that I have to take it on. But in other ways, it's really quite beautiful because you do absorb all this stuff, and I think that's what creates. You know how people are always talking about what their style is and what their uniqueness is, and no one can put their finger on it. But in my opinion, humble opinion, I think it's that ability to hold things and to absorb them a bit, you know, like in terms of like spiritual and physical experiences. I'm kind of going off on a bit of a weird tangent here, but I sort of feel like uniqueness comes from the ability to hold stuff.
Yeah, no.
And then to let it kind of move through you in a way.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. It's another way of saying that to me, what I hear you saying is that, or how I understand it, is that we are all kind of an amalgam of everything that we've experienced up to this point. And the work that we produce the work that we produce, whatever that may be, or however our creativity manifests itself, comes through that filter. And there's only one filter that is made of all the stuff that you've experienced in your life or I've experienced in my life put together that way. Like that's what they say, every single person is completely unique. Yeah. So that work or that voice that comes through, however it manifests itself, can only come from you because of the things that you've experienced and held and have made part of yourself. I guess.
Yeah.
You know,
it sounds a little bit, not wishy-washy is not the right word, but it sounds a bit amorphous. But I actually have a theory that maps could answer this for us. I think.
Really?
It'd have to be some kind of, but if you think about it, right? I don't know if I'm going way off tangent here, but everyone, like I've got two sisters, we grew up in the same family and yet our experience of that family is completely different. We have different memories. It might be also because we're there's quite a few years between each of us. But I think there has to be some kind of mathematical equation that can can describe experience and describe how everyone is it's like a matrix or, you know, I don't know, a web of experience.
Yeah, no, I understand exactly what you're saying. I don't know about the maths part though. Maths has never been my language, but,
maybe that's why I think it would work.
You know, there's sacred geometry, there's, you know, Fibonacci sequences and things like that. And all those patterns that start off in amoebas and go all the way into the galaxy. Yeah. So, yeah, I agree with you. I know, you know, I'll go off in a rabbit hole with anybody and talk about this stuff any time of day.
Yeah,
so.
Totally.
But it is interesting. And I mean, that's what makes it so important that everyone has the opportunity to express their creativity because it's different for everyone. So, so we've talked about the fabulousness of being in the flow. So what about when life swoops in and the creative flow is blocked or we block it ourselves? And I know I'm not a nice person when I am in that situation. You're talking about, your husband doesn't quite understand how these things happen. And, when life gets in the way, and I haven't got little kids at home anymore, but I know that when they did, and I couldn't write or I couldn't have that creative flow, or I suppose you get addicted to it in a way, don't you, really? I mean, you know, absolutely. If you don't have it, you get really, really cheesed off. It was almost like, I remember sometimes it was almost like PMT when you would, you know, be doing the dishes and hate everybody and then think, oh, okay, yeah, that's happening. And the same thing would happen if I didn't get my creative fix, you know. I'd be thinking, you're ruining my life. What am I going to do?
Yep.
So,
So
how do you cope with that kind of stuff when that happens?
Well, I think that's why these days I am doing more visual stuff, because writing, and I do quite a lot of writing, but it's not stories. It's I write a newsletter and I haven't
blogged
for like a year.
I love your newsletter.
Do you?
I love you. I do. I love it.
I'm smiling. I love writing it. And I think about everyone when I'm writing, because it's I have a fairly small list, so I kind of know everyone on it, I think. Not everyone, but I really enjoy feeling like I'm writing for people. It's almost like cooking. Like I really love feeding people. So there's this thing, like I love feeding people. I really love it. So it's the same thing with the newsletter. I just get this feeling that, you know, I don't know why, or maybe it's arrogant, but I don't know. It's something that I love to do. So when people tell me that they enjoy reading it, it just makes me feel so good.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm glad you feel good because it makes me feel good. Like, it makes me smile.
Oh, good.
Get it. It's, yeah, it's a lift. Yeah.
Cool. What was the question, though? I'm just so much thinking about myself right now.
Well, the question was, how do you cope when you can't get into your creative flow? Yeah, when your family's...
Well, I can't write.
Sorry, I should rephrase that. When your family's not driving you bananas, but when your family needs you to be present for them.
Well, it's funny, they don't drive me as bananas as they used to. I went through a phase, and it was just before my eldest started school, where I was a wreck. Like, I was miserable, and I was trying desperately to feel like this sense of achievement. And then I realized that I really probably should just give up. That's my dog barking. Shush.
That's okay.
I should just kind of give up. Oh, she's adorable. We love each other. Deedee. Shush. Yeah, so it was right before my kid started school, and he was a tricky kid just before that. At that time, he was really, I think he was just dying to go to school. I think he needed a bit of mental stimulation. And I was trying to write, and I think I might have just started working with Jen. Stora, sorry, I realised I'm on a podcast. Just started working with Jen Stora, and that kind of made me realise that writing is something that needs quiet for me. It needs quiet, it needs time, it needs space, and I did not have any of that. I had a little boy who was just being a real pain in the ass, to be honest, and then I had a baby, and and I'd forgotten how to love them, I think. I'd forgotten how much I loved them and how much joy they brought. And all I wanted to do was work. And I would get so angry that I couldn't just discard them. This is very personal. And do the work. I totally get what you mean, that you get frustrated if you can't get in the flow. But I think what I realized, and it took me a good couple of years, that I have to give up on certain things. You just can't have everything. And another friend of mine who's a graphic designer one day said to me, Zoe, you might hate this work that you're doing. And it was shitty work. It was like car ads in newspapers. And he said, but you're at a stage in your career where you don't have a choice. You have to do the crap work. And he said, find a way to enjoy it. And that has stayed with me for 20 years. And I remember the moment when I realised that with my kids that I'd forgotten how to enjoy it. And I said to myself, okay, you need to give something up in order to find that joy and love again. So my theory is that if you've got too much going on, the creativity gets stymied. So, and the other thing is too, like, the writing for me, it just became something that I'd punish myself with. Like, it'd be like, if I'm not writing, then I'm no good. So I think Jen really helped me understand that I can draw. Like, I can do art, I can do creative stuff, visual stuff really easily. Like, I'm not being arrogant, I just mean it comes a lot easier to me than writing.
Do you know what I can't believe? I can't believe that the stuff that we do easily is not good enough for us. Like, I've had a couple of things that I've been working on lately, and it was just this, you know, epiphany where it was like, this is so easy, this is coming so easily, this is making complete sense, and it's just flowing out of me. Why have I been trying to do that other thing? Why did I have to prove to myself, or why did I have to set myself this insane challenge and do this other thing that was really hard and made me really miserable?
Yeah.
To prove that I'm doing
yeah,
a real thing.
So to get it.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's true, I cut you off there.
No, it was worth it, man. It's so true, that whole you don't value something if it comes too easily. I think, you know, a bit of challenge is always good as well. But
yeah, but not where you kill yourself with it.
No. But the funny thing is that the earring ranges that I've designed and the tea towel that I've done recently, and I only do really small projects and I do them one at a time because that stuff comes like honey. It just, I can't even tell you how much I love doing that stuff because I don't, it's not a burden. The burden comes in producing it.
Mm. Yep.
So, you know, doing the testing on those laser cut earrings, the printing was really tricky. And it wasn't even my job. I'd outsourced that to my mate Wooly, who's a printer, and he was the one that was struggling with it. But it was really tricky to get those working. And the tea towel, you probably are aware that, you know, we went through a few different suppliers and then a few different, you know, to me that was the most excruciating part of it. The actual art part of it is just pure joy. Like, it really is. And I've never felt that as a graphic designer. Like, graphic design's way harder than making earrings.
Well, I guess that's the reward part, you know, the part that comes like honey. That's the reward part.
Yeah. It's just so, for me, the drawing stuff is so much easier. Why wouldn't I embrace that? And another thing that I think it's really important. I was doing last year. I did a year of art school with Lilla Rogers. She's American based, and she does this commercial illustration kind of courses where you learn how to sell your work, and you get given assignments from the real world, in inverted commas. And one thing that she says over and over and over again is people buy your joy. And I know, like, literally, she means people will give you money if you produce things that give you joy. But it also, it to me, buy doesn't necessarily mean handing over money. It means people will believe you, because that's truth, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. What sets you on fire sets other people on fire as well. It warms them and gets them excited. Yeah. So that's a great quote. I have to.
Yeah, it is a good one.
In the notes that I haven't written yet. Okay, so my next question, I don't even know really.
What are we up to?
Oh, well, I'm sort of, I have here, going back to the artist way, one of the tasks in the book is to go on an artist date where you do something that isn't your main passion but something that replenishes you. And so I love to get out in my garden and grow mostly veggies, to be honest, because another one of my things is cooking, as we were just talking about, and I also love feeding people. And so Sunday afternoons are like my day where I get ready for the rest of the week, and I'm in the kitchen, I'm cooking, and I have grand designs on my iView, and, you know, I'm just having a ball and listening to music or something like that. And that's sort of my artist date. That's totally something totally different from putting the effort into writing, but I love it. So what kind of thing? I've written down here, I love going to markets, art exhibitions, eating out and seeing live music and those sorts of things. And I'm not going to focus on the C word, the COVID word, but, you know, in 2020, you can't talk about anything without saying, well, I can't really do any of those things because we're in the middle of a pandemic, which does affect us, you know, no matter.
And I think even though we are sick of the C word, I think it's really important that we do acknowledge it and we do make mention of it as pure historical artifact.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's right. I mean, part of the reason for starting this podcast now is because it is the time that it is. And just the sort of the year of reflection, the year of reckoning for a lot of people, the year of uncovering things, people being isolated, so much time to reflect and think, and, you know, that's not always a good thing for some people, not very helpful. Personally, I never went anywhere anyway, so I've been quite lucky. So luckily, I'm a fortunate person that hasn't made that big of an impact on me. The worst part for me is the fact that some of my kids are in other states, and so I haven't been able to see them. That's a bummer. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that by Christmas we'll be able to move around again, and we'll all be together, my family, at Christmas time.
I've got a question for you.
Okay, Zoe.
I hope I haven't forgotten it, since I do forget things easily. So do you think the reason that you and I and others don't go out much is because we don't need to, because we have such a rich inner life?
I'd like to tell myself that. I do. Well, as I said, like, I'm older. I remember back in the days when I was a young person, when I was young and my husband, who was not my husband then but my boyfriend, when we lived in the city in Sydney and we were young, we did everything. You know, we went out, saw bands, had zillions of people over all the time. I cooked millions of trays of lasagna for all our friends and all of that sort of stuff. So I don't feel dudded in the respect, you know, I know a lot of people who sort of didn't do a lot of things until they were 40 and then woke up one day and thought, you know, the only thing I didn't do when I was young was make money, unfortunately. But, you know, you got to deal with that stuff, don't you?
Me neither.
Yeah. So my personal experience is that I don't feel that I'm missing out, and I feel like now I'm focusing on that other part of my life, the inner life, the, you know, the pulling things out and do it. And that makes me totally happy. I'm totally happy. Yeah. I don't miss anything else. I do like to go out and do things, and then when I do them, I think, oh, that's right. This is pretty
cool. Yeah, same.
But I'd never want to feel like I had to. Yeah. And I do need to be reminded, and sometimes I need to be forced into
it. Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah. So
I feel great resentment every time someone asks me, you know, to go to something with them. I'm like, oh, crap. And then as it gets closer and closer, I think, oh, I really don't want to go. And then, you know, I turn up at the Queensland Art Gallery and I am blown away by the Indigenous art that is on display at the moment. And it's incredible. And I chastise myself for ever not thinking that I wouldn't want to go.
Yeah, that's right. And you can't believe the inspiration and richness that you get from that experience. So it's fantastic. I guess I tend to do mine in blocks. You know, I tend to do all that stuff. If back in the olden days when we were allowed to actually travel, if I went to visit my kids in Victoria, I would do the lot. You know, we'd go to a restaurant, we'd go to the art gallery, we'd do the whole thing, so that it's just like I binge myself on experience to last me the 8 months until
I really end. I do miss that. I really miss Melbourne. I just miss that. I just love Melbourne.
Yeah, me too.
I love the smell of it. I love the atmosphere. I love that I get off the plane and I know where to go. Like, I know what I'm doing. I can find my way around. And
I'm not quite there yet, but I'm getting there. But my kids actually live out of Melbourne, and I really love even going out there where they live in the bush, because I'm originally from Adelaide in South Australia.
Oh,
and so that's more like what I grew up with. So there's just that recognition, even though I love where I live, which is up on the north coast where it's lush and tropical and green and all that sort of stuff, there's that recognition in your bones of just like, oh yeah, you know, I know this landscape, I know this sort of place. And it's just so cool. I mean, they've still got their hardware shop and they've got this big place that sells all vintage everything, and it's just so creative and so, I don't know, juicy. It's great. I love it. I love Sydney too. Don't get me wrong. I love Sydney as well. Sydney, we love you. Love you too.
The thing with Sydney is that I was born there, I really loved visiting. And I think, so I was born there and then we moved up to Queensland when I was like 6 or 7. And I remember our closest family friends still live there right in the city, like Petersham or Leichhardt. Mm. And I remember as a teenager going to visit them, and something in my body went, this is where you belong. You need to live in a city, and you need to be able to get on a bus, because this is what happened. We were 16. I was 16. My older sister was probably 21. And we went to visit this family, and they had a daughter who's probably a year younger than me. I remember Angela at 15 taking us around the city, and we had our own money, and we were on the bus, and there were no adults. And I just remember thinking, this is living. And so ever since that moment, I've been hell-bent on living in a city, and that's where I live now. I live 4 kilometres out of Brisbane Central, and we walk everywhere.
That's a beautiful place too. Like, Brisbane's lovely as well. I had kids going to uni at Brisbane, so I did the night train, the 1 o'clock in the morning train from Coffs Harbour up to Brisbane many times. Yeah. Oh dear. Yeah. I still love going and dipping my toes in the city and then coming back. Yeah. It's great. And Brisbane's lovely. It's a bit less than some other place.
Yeah, it's not as city as other cities.
It's beautiful. Okay, I don't know how we got there, but let's get official.
You've got a hell of an editing job ahead of you.
Oh, I don't even know if I will. I'm really enjoying it. Like, this is the kind of thing I like to listen to. So, you know, I'm happy to leave it that way if you're happy.
I don't think I've sworn or said anything.
No, you haven't. Too bad. No, you've been very articulate. It's very good. So, Zoe. Let me ask you, what creative projects are you working on right now, apart from Tea Towels, which I absolutely love and can't wait until I get one of?
I am working on just so many things, Ellie. I cannot stop. I'm actually in a little bit of a post-project lull. So the Tea Towel is at the printer being produced, and I'm trying not to think about that too much because it's kind of stressful waiting for things to come back from a printer. But I have a list of things which is not written down. It's just a physical list. So I walk into my studio and I can see that Noritake dish that I bought at the op shop, and I am dying to draw all over that. So that's one of my things that I love to do, is I go to the op shop and it has to be Noritake because I love Noritake. And, you know, it's kind of like the bone china that my grandma had, and I draw on it, and I feel like I hope Noritake doesn't mind that I deface their beautiful ceramics, but I draw on them. So I can see that sitting there. I'm like, that's going to come out at some point. I'm just going to get that urge for that bowl or plate, and I'm going to draw all over it. I've got jelly printing on the go. Finally, after years of wondering what the hell jelly printing was, a couple of weeks ago I saw a kit on sale at Spotlight and I bought it. And I've been doing a lot of that. I don't know what else I've got going on. Oh, actually, one thing I really want to do is a zine. And I've got a book waiting there. It's called the Feel Better book. And I mentioned it in my newsletter recently that that's probably going to be the next project. But I'm really stumped as to what I'm going to do with it. I don't know if it's commercially viable. And I have to say, I am all about the commercially viable stuff. I am a businesswoman. I do want to make money. I have to say that unashamedly. But this book is sort of like my little darling that I've been nursing probably for, I don't know, 300 years. It feels like it's part of me. And I've never really known what it is, but I finally feel like I get that this is the thing that's been circling around it's sort of around my back ear area. It just sort of hovers there.
Yeah, waiting to land. I've heard projects, or it was actually an author, I forget who it was, who said that the other ideas are like planes circling around his head, and they're just waiting to come, and he always feels them there, but, you know, they don't land until it's time to land. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Or until they badge you into it.
Yeah, it's sort of like they crash into you and you're like, oh, what was that? Me, oh, yes, that's right.
Me.
I don't know what I've got going on, but that zine, I'm trying to decide, is it going to be a traditionally produced zine where it looks cheap and it's cool, mm-hmm. Or do I do something that looks beautiful? But if I do something that looks beautiful, that's going to cost a lot more money to produce. And I just don't know if anyone's going to want to buy this book. Like I said, it's not something that I can really put my finger on. I don't know what it is. It's just a book that's kind of come about during that whole COVID moment where I realized that I just really wanted to feel better. So I went and had this big talk with my husband. And usually when I say I have a big talk with my husband, it's me offloading and he just patiently listens. Poor bastard. And he's so great. He's also really annoying. But anyway, I sat down and I got my iPad out. God bless the iPad Pro. Oh, my God, it's made my life so much richer. But I sat down and I started writing quite angrily about things that I really wasn't grateful for. And a few things that came up were like carrots. Like, oh, I hate carrots. I really don't like carrots. It tastes like orange, you know. It's not good. Not orange the fruit, but it just, it's got that dirty. Oh, but I eat it because I'm grateful for it. I really am. It's on a certain level. It's got vitamins. It's crunchy. So I started writing down, you know, carrots. I'm grateful for carrots. And then I did these hashtags. It was like crunchy, orange. And then I said, but I really hate them. And then I wrote another thing that I'm grateful for is my dog, which is absolutely true. I freaking love this dog, right? More than I've ever loved another creature other than my humans that I love. But I wrote down, yeah, I love her. She's fluffy. She's funny. She's naughty. And then I wrote, but she weed on the carpet. It's like, for me, the gratitude, the challenge is finding things to be grateful about that really aren't that great. And also in finding, like, being grateful for things that are really mundane.
Yeah, yeah, that's what
and
I
also
was
acknowledging
say,
yeah. That, yeah, and also acknowledging that even the great stuff is a little bit shit.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
Can't we just say,
is wrapped up in the shit sometimes.
Yeah, so and that's what that's what I think the gratitude challenges miss is the acknowledgement of the shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's right. Of the real life. Like it's all right to be yeah. la la, everything is lovely and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. But most of the time it isn't. Yeah. And we shouldn't ignore the stuff that isn't la la lovely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we should embrace that stuff and just like rub your face in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, vomit. Okay.
That's a great segue actually to my final question. About food.
I love food, yes. Ask me about food. I could talk about that for hours.
Well, this is my question about how to eat a story. I also love food. I love food a lot. Mm-hmm. And for me, food and stories are inextricably entwined with each other. So I've got so many stories about food and that when I cook things, I remember where it came from, where the recipe came from. My grandmother gave me this recipe. We sat there and made soup together and so on and so forth.
I'm nodding my head vigorously.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, food and stories, definitely. Tell me a story about food.
Okay, I've lots, but this is the one that look, I've got many, but it's called Sunday lunch, right? Mm-hmm. So ever since my kids started school, I've started to feel a little more freedom in terms of I could actually do something with adults that wouldn't have to involve lots of kid wrangling. So my dream is to do Sunday lunch where I get people together once a month. They come over, I set a theme, I cook something, they cook something, and we sit down and maybe it's like maybe we're eating curry or maybe we're eating, I don't know, I can't even think, maybe we're eating orange food or yellow food or and it's this real urge that I have, like I really want to get back to my childhood, which was on Sundays. My mum really liked to cook as well, and my dad was really social, and they had this really lovely group of friends. My mum was a teacher aide and a librarian, so all the teachers would come over to our house and we would sit around our garden and just eat and talk for hours on end. And I just, that's what I want to do. I want to start that up again, but at my house with my friends.
Sounds just, like perfection to me.
It just, it reminds me of that movie, like Water for Chocolate. Have you seen that?
Yes. Yeah.
Where, yeah. So, except I won't be making people, like, I remember she cried into something.
And then everyone was sad. Yeah. She was casting spells with her cooking. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I'm not sure I really want to cast spells, but I just want to recreate that magic of timelessness where you don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to think about anything. You can just sit and eat. And I've got some friends who are way better cooks than me. Like, they actually know how to, like, follow recipes. I'm not so good at the recipe thing. I just sort of look at a recipe and go, oh, yeah, I can manage something.
I can adapt that to what I have.
Yeah, to what I've actually got in the fridge. Yeah,
that's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's my thing. I do everything is, what's, you know, sit around the table. What do you call this, love? This is roast chicken a la Ellie or lasagna a la Ellie, you know, meaning I've completely made it up, used the basic recipe, made the rest up myself. Yes, well, thank you.
All right. Well, yeah, no, I think we covered a lot of ground.
I think we did. It's fantastic. I'm so happy that I had the chance to talk to you. Thank you so much.
I'd like to say au revoir, but I don't have a good French accent.
So. Say it anyway. Say it anyway.
No. Glad I already did.
Okay.
Alrighty. Thanks, Ellie.
Thanks so much, Zoe. Thanks for sharing your story so generously and openly. I've had a little bit of feedback already and people have really resonated with what we've been talking about in this episode. One of the things I've loved about it so much is the honest exchange of ideas. It's wonderful to share your story, and next episode, I'll be talking about the science behind the well-being effect of sharing stories. If you've enjoyed this episode, would you consider giving it a rating? Maybe you think it's 2 stars? Maybe you think it's 5 stars? At any rate, I'd love to know what you think, because that's going to help me moving forward. You can find me online at www.ellieroyceauthor.com. You can find me on Instagram at ellieroycekidlitauthor. And you can find the podcast account at Made of Stories with Ellie Royce on Instagram. I'd love you to pop in at the Instagram account and leave me any comments or thoughts. Let me know whether you enjoyed the episode. You can find Zoe on Instagram at hoodlumfriends and at her webpage, hellozoecollins.com.au. Talk to you soon. And remember, we are all made of stories. Bye.